time for FLA Law, brought to you by the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. This hour will be informative, along with taking your questions and comments. Now, here are your hosts for today's show.
On the air with FLA Law live on the radio, and we are back every Tuesday, as you know, with your legal call-in talk show every Tuesday at 5. Hopefully, if you're in the car, you're driving home, you can tune in, tell your family, friends, we're on the air answering your questions tonight. As our intro says, we are the personal injury attorneys at Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. But as you know, we will often have special guests and attorneys with us on the air. And I'm very excited because we have a wonderful guest with us tonight who will get to talk to you about some family law issues, child support, divorce, custody, different things within that realm. But we may go off onto other little issues that she also practices in. So it should be a great show tonight. But before I get into introducing my lovely co-host and guest tonight, I'm going to, of course, give you the rundown on how to find us, making sure that you have the call-in information and know where we're streaming. So first and foremost, we are in the studio, so the best way to call in is to call the studio at 727-441-3000. Again, that's 727-441-3000. That's the number to call in and get your questions answered live on the air. Now, if you're one of those people who just don't want to call in, don't want to hear your voice on the radio, you prefer just to type a question in the comment section, you can do that as well. We are streaming live on not only our Facebook, but I believe you are also streaming on your Facebook, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So if you know the attorney and her, and you are tuning in to Melissa Goodlow, she is streaming live from her Facebook channel, and we're also streaming on Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. So that's a way to find the live stream. If you are not a Facebook user, but you do have YouTube, you can also find it that way. It's the same name, Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. You can find the live stream there. Of course, ask your questions. I'll read them out live over the air and respond to them, and my guests and I will take a stab at whatever your questions might be. And if we can't answer them, we'll try to point you in the right direction at least. So definitely call in or comment your questions. With that being said, we know that we have a special guest, and I will kind of let her give you a little bit of her bio, but she is Melissa Goodlow, and she has her own law firm here in the Tampa Bay area, and she was gracious enough to come on and talk to our listeners tonight about all the areas that she practices in. But we're going to focus and spend some time talking mostly about family law. But with that being said, the lines are open. The number is 727-441-3000. Melissa, please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for having me here today.
Absolutely.
So I am Melissa Goodlow. I am the owner and founder of Goodlow Law, which is located in Tampa, Florida. I service Tampa Bay and surrounding areas, but really I take cases anywhere all over the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. I am a Clearwater native, born and raised right here in Clearwater. So
I did not know that.
Yes,
I'm a St. Pete native. So.
Okay. Hi, Nellis County.
Yeah.
And did my undergrad at USF and graduated from Thomas M. Cooley Law School in January of 2016.
Okay.
And so I started out working for the state of Florida Department of Children and Families doing juvenile dependency cases.
Okay.
So abuse, abandonment, neglect.
How did you like that kind of work? That seems heavy.
It was very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Very heavy indeed. You see a lot of things that you can't unsee.
Yeah.
The ugly side of humanity, for sure. And so when I got tired of that, I switched gears, did insurance defense for a while. It's actually how I met Brian Caulfield.
Okay.
He and I were on a case together.
Did you really?
Yes, yes, yes. That's how I knew when you made partner. Sent the card and notification.
I did not know you were opposing counsel on a case. Well, look, I hope it was a good interaction.
It was a very good interaction. Brian was amazing. He really is. He absolutely is the epitome of how you would want your ideal opposing counsel to be.
He was
amazing. And so I did that until I ended up having my son in April of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed home for a while, did some contract work, and then, you know, when I was ready to go back to work, I couldn't find work.
Okay.
Believe it or not, nobody wanted to hire me. So
was that pre-COVID or had COVID? This was during the pandemic.
It was actually, so my quest started pre-COVID.
Okay.
And kind of went into COVID. And so people were definitely still hiring.
Okay.
Because I definitely was like doing interviews and applications.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't getting anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's why I actually decided to just create my own opportunity and launched Good Low Law.
Yeah. And that last week, my guest, McKinley Justin, had a similar story. He was like, I went to an interview and they didn't even have me on the calendar. And he's like, I'm walking down to the parking lot feeling defeated, and I'm like, what am I going to do? And he's like, I might as well just do this for myself. And it was a success story. So I'm always curious as to those who have the bravery, because it's really bravery in my opinion to hang a shingle and figure out how you got to that point. So it sounds like it was a bit out of necessity at that point, but now it sounds like you've built a pretty thriving practice now.
So far, so good. I'll be celebrating 4 years in June. So.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. So anything else? Like, I know you said you have a son. Anything else you'd like to share with us? Don't you do some travel and you're big into to going on solo trips and stuff?
I do. Look at you paying attention to the Facebook.
I see social media now.
I do. So on the side, I do. I'm a travel agent on the side. And so I do enjoy to travel. I'm a bit of a wanderlust. So, yeah, I like to take trips out of the country here and there. I just got back from Mexico last week, actually.
Yeah, I think you mentioned to me on the phone that you were celebrating a birthday.
I did.
Happy belated.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. So we've talked about your firm and where you're located, but what do you do? What kind of practice areas do you handle?
So I do family law and personal injuries.
Okay.
So with family law, I do really anything that you can think of, from divorce to custody, child support, prenuptial and postnuptial agreements, adoptions, step-parent and adult adoptions, temporary custody, really anything that you can think of that is family law related, I pretty much handle.
Well, that's what we're going to be getting into today. So let's dive in. We've got some viewers on Facebook. If you are seeing this and you feel like somebody would benefit from this conversation who may have some family law related questions, please share, comment their name, tag them to the post so they can tune in to Attorney Goodlow and hopefully get some benefit from what we're about to discuss. With that being said, I know you said divorce is one of the things that you practice. Would you say that's kind of the larger part of what you do, or?
I would say the majority of my cases tend to fall into divorce and paternity actions.
Okay.
So like most of my family law cases involve minor children.
Okay, gotcha. So then as far as the divorce process, we'll take the paternity and the divorces separately. So let's start with divorce. What does that process typically look like here in the state of Florida for someone that maybe hasn't gone through a divorce or maybe contemplating a divorce or just got served with a divorce? What does that process kind of look like?
So what the process looks like is really going to depend on the parties. Usually divorces are going to be either contested or uncontested. Most of what I handle are contested cases, meaning that the parties are not necessarily on the same page up front in terms of what their divorce is going to look like and how to really resolve the outstanding issues in their case. And essentially, you have to litigate to kind of get to a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So every contested case is always diverted to mediation, where they're going to,
That's kind of a mandatory thing.
In a contested case, absolutely, because the court wants to give the parties an opportunity to try to resolve the issues on their own, because absolutely, I mean, who better else is going to be able to make those decisions impacting you and your family than, you know, those who know your family best, right? The judge is a complete stranger, doesn't know you or your family, they just know the law and whatever facts you may happen to be able to present to them.
Right.
Yeah. So most of the time when it's contested, it really, how long it takes really, again, depends on the parties. Mm-hmm. The more contested, the longer it's going to take.
Right. So if you can't if you can't agree on the issues, then you could be in litigation for quite some time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Some of the more contentious cases can certainly last a significant period of time, mm-hmm. 2-3 years. I've seen cases last 4 years, wow. even more. It just kind of depends on the parties and yeah. what's at stake in the case.
Right. And we can see that, obviously, as you know, in personal injury as well, where sometimes if there's disputed liability or the damages are really high or there's causation issues, then litigation could take a while. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, it looks like we may have a caller. Before I dive into that whole litigation diatribe, we have a caller on the line. Joy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
I'm well.
Do you have a question for us?
Yes. So I'm currently going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. And my soon-to-be ex-husband's attorney is AWOL. Mm. So he retained the attorney, at least that's what he's telling me. He retained the attorney. The attorney went to the courts and put it on the he advised the courts that he will be his legal counsel.
Sure.
Okay.
And so it's on the books that he's the legal counsel. And I hired an attorney who is on my, books that she's representing me. But my attorney sent all the documents to his attorney. His attorney never called my attorney back, returned any of her calls, never contacted my soon-to-be ex-husband back. He can't find the attorney. It's been over a year that I've been like stuck in this marriage trying to get a divorce.
Jeez.
And it's kind of hard reaching my attorney because I'll leave her voice messages, I'll send her text messages and emails, and then it'll be forever when she gets back in contact with me. And I was so afraid that the retainer money was going to be gone just with her trying to reach her. And it's like we're at a standstill.
Like we're having problems
so
on both
now,
sides, huh?
Mm. My soon-to-be ex-husband is stating that he went to the court and he put in a request or something to remove his attorney, because now my attorney is saying she could represent both of us since neither one of us are contesting it. But now I sent her a message and I said, where are you? Because she was supposed to go through the boards and then go to the courts herself, and she's not responding to me. At least she responds more than his attorney. His attorney hasn't responded at all.
Okay.
I don't know.
So, Joy, is it your question as far as what you can do in this situation?
Should I go to the courts and get rid of my attorney and just file for the divorce and do it ourselves? Or do you think we will need...
Yeah. So it sounds like it's uncontested. So I'm going to let Melissa kind of give you her thoughts on whether it's wise to represent yourself or not.
Well, is it uncontested actually was going to be my first question, because, you had stated, Joy, that it had been over a year since paperwork was filed. And so I don't know if the paperwork that was filed was paperwork where essentially you all had worked together and came up with a marital settlement agreement, and essentially all that's remaining is for the court to kind of sign off on that. I'm not sure where you are in the process, and so I kind of would need to know that in order to be able to answer your question. I certainly never recommend going through this process mm-hmm. without an attorney.
Right.
No matter where you are in the stage of the process, I mean, yes, there is a way to certainly have your attorney removed from the case if you're wanting to hire another attorney. I don't recommend, as I said, going through the case and continuing on your own. But you certainly can have your attorney removed from the case. There certainly is a process where you, as a client, are able to do that. So you certainly could give my office a call and we could talk about it in more detail. There's definitely a lot of facts.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like more that you would need to know.
Yeah, that are kind of missing from the equation to kind of figure out where you are in the process. But the short answer to your question
is... We haven't even had a first court date yet. I've given her all of the paperwork. We've completed everything in detail from the child support to the selling... He's keeping the house and buying me out of the house. Everything's completed.
Okay, because usually at some point the court is going to call for a case management conference, you know, when a case has been pending for especially over a year. You know, the court at some point should be looking at their docket to see where you're at. And at some point you should have been to a case management conference. But again, I'm happy to go more in depth. Like I said, it's very fact specific.
What we recommend, Joy, is maybe giving Attorney Goodlow a call so that you can speak to her specifically about what's going on, because as she said, you can absolutely retain new counsel, but that's something that obviously she'll have to get into more detail with you off of the air. Do you want to give her your contact information, Melissa?
Yes, ma'am. 813-865-3082, or you can schedule an assessment through my website directly through goodlowlawpllc.com.
Thank you.
Did you get that?
Yes, I got it.
Perfect. Thank you so much for calling, Joy, and I hope that was helpful to you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. So that frees up a line. The lines are still open for your questions. Keep them coming. The number is 727-441-3000. Again, that's 727-441-3000. If you have any other questions for Attorney Goodlow, feel free to call in with those as we go along. So we were getting into a discussion about litigation before the call came in. And so I think what I was kind of curious about is the kind of litigation we're looking at. Is this leading up to a bench trial with a judge, or is this a jury trial? How does that work in the family, in the divorce sector?
So in divorce, there's no jury. Okay. It's a bench trial with a judge. If you make it that far, end up having to have a final hearing.
Right.
How much litigation is going to depend, again, on the parties and kind of what's at stake and what's at issue in the case.
Right.
Usually the two main things that people fight about in a divorce case are the house and the kids.
Right.
Those are usually the two main issues. If there's a marital home, there's usually one party that wants to retain it and one party who wants to either, you know, sell it or get bought out of it or whatever, could care less and is ready to walk away from the home, but they want, you know, their equitable share out of the home, right?
Right.
And then there's the time sharing with the kids. A lot of people fight about that and what that should look like. So how much litigation depends on the parties. Sometimes, you know, I got cases where I'm doing mandatory disclosures, which are customary financial documents that are required in every family case unless the parties waive. So that's standard. But then, you know, people will dive in with interrogatories where they're doing, you know, wanting sworn questions about time sharing specifically. There's family law interrogatories. I'll end up in depositions, right? Having my client deposing their clients to keep it fair.
Sure, sure.
You know, sometimes they've got boyfriends or girlfriends on the other side and they want those depositions.
So. Do you ever depose the children, the minors?
No. Okay. I've yet to see that. The courts frown upon introducing kids and having them exposed to the litigation.
Right.
A kid can't even testify in court unless you file a motion and have it heard.
Okay.
And the court makes a decision upon whether or not they can even testify.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting, because one of the factors in time sharing is, you know, the reasonable preference of the child.
Sure, what's best, or was it the best interest of the child?
There's best interest factors, and there's more than 20 factors that the court looks at, and one of those factors is the reasonable preference of the kid. But sometimes, you know, they're too young to express a preference.
Sure.
Sometimes they're teenagers, and, you know, they want to be able to express a preference, but regardless, it's going to be up to the court to decide if they're going to ever be involved to testify. But I always try to keep them out of it.
Gotcha.
So I've yet to have any kids testify in any of my cases.
Right. So then when it comes to mediation versus trial, so some things can get resolved at mediation. So let's say, like you mentioned, time sharing is an issue with the kids, the house is an issue, but we can agree about the house, but we're still not able to agree about the kids. So one issue can resolve at mediation and the other can go to trial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Parties will always have a chance to resolve some or all of their issues in mediation. And sometimes you'll get a partial settlement where, like you said, you'll resolve the issue with like equitable distribution in the house and what that looks like. Sometimes you'll resolve the time sharing and not the equitable distribution. Like, it just kind of depends. Sometimes you don't resolve nothing.
Right. Been there, done that. Okay. So then our caller kind of brought it up and we touched on it briefly here about the uncontested divorce, or I guess the divorce where there's really no issues that there is a disagreement on. Could you explain a little bit how that process looks when it's, we all agree, let's say both spouses don't have any disputes, really.
Right. So typically in an uncontested divorce, those cases are going to get wrapped up fairly quickly because the parties have already discussed kind of what they want, their how to resolve the outstanding issues in their case, and they essentially have gone to the attorney to finalize that, memorialize that, put it in writing, make sure that, you know, all of the legal requirements are met. Because I tell people all the time, like, everything is governed by statute. So if the legal requirements aren't met, the court isn't going to sign off on it, right? So it's just, it's more than just putting it on paper, right? It's making sure the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And so, but usually that process goes fairly quickly, and you can usually wrap up those cases within a few months.
I was just about to ask, because that's one of the number one questions that we get when we're handling PI cases, is how long is this going to take? And it depends, the lawyer answer, right?
Always.
So I would imagine that you get that question as well, especially when people are trying to make a clean break. They want to move on. Maybe they're ready to marry someone else. Or something like that. So it's like, well, how long is this going to take? So when it comes to an uncontested divorce, then it could be just a few months.
It could be done fairly quickly. I mean, sometimes there's back and forth about certain details, you know what I mean, within the agreement, but usually it's minor stuff that doesn't take much back and forth about. Sometimes, you know, there might be a little bit, but it just depends on the parties. But usually speaking, an uncontested divorce can wrap up in less than 90 days if you do it right.
Okay. So then back to our caller's question then, you kind of answered it already, but if it's that simple, and I'm simplifying, so I know it's not, but if it's that simple and we all agree, then do I really need an attorney?
Well, that's why I question kind of where she was at in the stage of the process, because, you know, if you have the agreement already done and finalized and it's just a matter of the court signing off on it, then likely you might be able to continue without, you know, your attorney if everything's already been reviewed beforehand. But she mentioned, the caller specifically mentioned it being over a year for the other attorney.
Something sounds off.
Her attorney, you know, she hadn't really heard from her. And so it's like, well, I don't know. Is everything that she agreed to in her best interest? Right? Like, those are things that I would question, again, like, kind of where they are.
Right. And should it be uncontested? You're right. So as an attorney, you may be able to advise your client that some certain issues maybe he or she shouldn't agree to.
Exactly. Especially when it comes to like the house, because a lot of people will be like, hey, I don't want it, they can have it, I'll just walk away. But there's equity in the house, right? Like, you are a joint owner in the home, so, you know, you might not want to walk away from from the equity in the home. You say that now, but, you know, I've had people come to me, you know, representing themselves on their own in their divorces, because, let's face it, divorce is very traumatic, right? And it's, nobody goes and says I do thinking one day it's going to turn into an I don't, right? And so a lot of people really are at their breaking point. They really do just want to be done, and a lot of times they will walk away. And I've had those people come to me later and say, hey, you know, I've had some time to think about it. Can I maybe, you know, go back and seek alimony, right? Can I go back and reopen my case? And then I have to be the bearer of bad news and tell them, unfortunately, no.
Right.
So that's why it's so important to have an attorney from the beginning, to at least, if nothing else, have a consultation and consult with, so at least you kind of know what steps you need to take from there.
Exactly. And you made a good point. It's a little bit of a tangent, but I want to touch on it because you said you don't really go into the marriage thinking that, you know, it's going to fail. Mm-hmm. But that brings up a good point with prenups, because it almost, one might argue, is you are thinking about what if it fails mm-hmm. before you even get married. And so I feel like there's this, you know, depending on who you talk to, there's probably a split thought about that. I know some marriage counselors would absolutely say, no, why are you thinking about prenups? You're mm-hmm. already thinking about divorce and you didn't even get married.
Right.
But obviously attorneys might say you absolutely, absolutely should always have one. So what are your thoughts on prenups, and do you do that as a part of your practice?
Oh, yes. Ma'am, I am so pro prenup and postnup. Like, if you don't have time to do a prenup, make it a postnup.
Right.
And here's why. You're right. There's a huge stigma around prenuptial and postnuptial agreements. A lot of people think it's negative and like, no, I'm not going into my marriage thinking about divorce.
Right.
But you got to change your perspective on that. It's mm-hmm. not... I look at prenups and postnups as an act of love, because you are making a decision together.
Mm-hmm.
You are, I mean, you're going to be represented by a separate counsel,
sure,
right?
Sure.
But you're making the decision together that you want to talk about your assets and how you want to address those things. And it's going to prevent issues later on down the road in the event that you do end up getting divorced or separated. Because
right.
let's face it, the United States, we have the highest divorce rate in the entire world. And yeah. so,
sadly,
divorce
but
is
the
not,
job security.
You know, like I said, divorce is, you know, unfortunately, it can happen. And in the event that it does happen, you just want to ensure that you are each protected
mm-hmm.
and that you, you know, like I said, are protecting your assets, your liabilities. You've already decided how you want to divide things in the event you get divorced, and it will save so much time and money
right.
in the event that you do end up in a divorce.
I remember one attorney said, and I wish I could give them credit for who said it, but they were like, it's better to make these decisions while you are in love and you love each other and you're in that early honeymoon phase versus when things have fallen apart and you no longer get along and everything's contentious. It's hard to agree. So it's better to kind of think of those things when the love is there. And with that being said, before we go to our commercial break, I wanted to ask you about how the prenup plays into the divorce process. Because I've heard the phrase, oh, it's an ironclad prenup, then you don't get this or you don't get that. Does that make the process extremely easy, or does it become even more litigious now because you're trying to figure out if there's loopholes in the prenup, or if the prenup was valid, or if
right.
it was properly done? How does that impact the divorce proceeding?
I mean, certainly there are always going to be those that try to contest the prenup or the mm-hmm. validity of the prenup or, mm-hmm. you know, the enforceability of the prenup. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's very, very difficult to get a prenup set aside.
Okay.
And if it's done correctly, it's going to cut down on all that litigation.
All
and
the
in
riffraff.
The event that, yeah, all the riffraff, exactly. And in the event that someone is doing so frivolously, there are a good prenup is going to already have built into it the ability to get your attorney's fees
okay.
When you're having to deal with stuff like that, because
gotcha.
It says what it says and you signed it and you agreed to it and
right.
you know it is what it is. So it definitely helps put a lot of things to bed.
Gotcha. Well, I think that's a good point for us to take a short break. We will have Attorney Goodloe back with us after the commercial break to answer your questions in regards to family law, divorce, child custody, all these things. Again, the number for calling in will be 727-441-3000. She's also streaming live on her Facebook. We're streaming live on our Facebook. Answer your questions in the chat, and we'll be back after this commercial.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
In 1955, the law firm now known as Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes made a decision. Instead of taking whatever cases came through their doors, they decided to focus specifically on personal injury. 64 years later, the law firm is one of Clearwater's longest-running personal injury firms. Available 24 hours a day with offices in Clearwater and throughout Tampa Bay, they're ready to put decades of experience to work for you if you or a loved one has been injured in a car accident or injured due to someone's negligence or recklessness. If you feel overwhelmed, uncertain, or unsure about your next steps after being involved in an accident or after a loved one sustained serious injuries due to someone else's negligence, call Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes at 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. That's 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. Non-attorney spokesman.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Back with FLA Law live on the radio. Hopefully you have been tuned in to the entire show since 5, but if not, if you're just joining us, we have attorney Melissa Goodlow, who is here from Goodlow Law, and she is talking about family law matters, and we've been having a pretty good discussion so far about the processes that are entailed involving divorce and those topics. So we are obviously going to keep going down that avenue, but shift gears a little bit and start talking about paternity, child custody, time sharing, and those sorts of things. But of course, if you have a question, even if it's back on the divorce topic that we were just talking about, feel free to give us a call at 727-441-3000. Again, that's 727-441-3000, or drop a comment in the live chats and we'll read them out live on the air and get your questions answered. All right, so Melissa, we were briefly talking about prenups, and just before we pivot and shift gears, what's the difference between a prenup and a postnup? Obviously, we know one's before marriage, mm-hmm. one can be done after marriage. Are they pretty much identical in terms of the way that they're enforced?
Yeah, that's okay. Really the main difference is, mm-hmm. is one is before the marriage, one is after.
Okay.
The disclosures are different as well, but outside of that, the agreements are essentially designed to accomplish the same goal, mm-hmm. which is to protect your assets, you know. A lot of times people will have businesses,
sure.
You know, family inheritances.
Mm-hmm. So if you know things might be changing as far as the dynamic in the marriage, it may be wise to consider a postnup if you didn't have a prenup.
Perhaps. I mean, I'm a fan of doing it from jump, but
course,
you know, but
course.
Certainly things can always change, and you know, people can always reconsider,
yeah.
and it's never too late.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking maybe people went into it. Let's say they've been married 20 years, mm-hmm. and they didn't have one. They never thought they needed one, and then all of a sudden, Mr. John Doe gets a huge inheritance, and you know. Grandma Sue passes away and leaves him properties and money and all kinds of things. And now we think we might need a postnup. So that could be a time when they consider
sure.
all that.
Okay. That could certainly happen.
Okay, interesting. So let's talk a little bit about paternity cases and how they're different. Because honestly, I don't know a lot about it. So I don't know if I'm lumping these categories together. Is child support and paternity the same, or is that two separate things? And what does that really mean as far as paternity?
Child support is addressed as part of a paternity case. Mm-hmm. You know, the courts are required to address it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can certainly have an administrative child support case that has nothing to do with establishing time sharing or parental responsibility or anything like that you typically have in a paternity case. So, for example, this actually just came up in a Facebook group that I'm in last week, where anonymous poster had said that they had a young child, that the father of the child wasn't helping financially, and they wanted to put him on child support. But they didn't want to have to deal with the time sharing, right?
Yeah.
And dealing with all the parental responsibility. And so you can just do an administrative child support case and just have the state address child support
okay.
Without filing a paternity action and addressing issues like time sharing and parental responsibility. But if you do file a paternity case, then the court is obviously going to have to address child support as part of that.
Right. Okay, so before we get into more detail about that, I do believe we have a caller on the line. Yvonne, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Yvonne. Hi. How are you?
Hi, Yvonne.
Good.
Do you have a question for us?
Oh, just a simple question. It was just about if you're divorced and you get, you're entitled to half of his pension and you remarry.
Okay.
Are you still entitled for half of his pension or not?
So equitable distribution is where the pension would come into play, which would be separate and apart from alimony. So alimony being, spousal support that could certainly come to an end if you are in a supportive relationship, mm-hmm. would be separate from the equitable distribution that would entitle you to the retirement. So my guess is that you probably have a quadro of qualified domestic relations order that probably addresses the pension that you're entitled to. And so you remarrying would have no bearing on that. That's part of the equitable distribution.
Right. So when it comes to things like pensions, you could still be entitled to some of those things that were already divided up in your order, your divorce decree, even though you've now moved on and remarried and mm-hmm. you have a new spouse.
Yes, because a lot of people don't realize that pensions are considered marital. Mm-hmm. If it's accumulated, if there's
asset,
any portion
yeah.
of it that's been accumulated during the marriage, that portion of it is considered marital.
Mm-hmm.
But your pension isn't going to kick in until you retire. And
sure.
so what likely happened is that they divorced prior to the other spouse's retirement, but
right.
that doesn't mean that she's not entitled to it. She just has to wait
for that
right,
to
until
kick
they
in.
Retire yeah. for that pension to kick in and start to receive benefits from it. So
okay.
it would have been ordered as part of the final judgment, and there would have been a separate order to address that, which we call a quadro.
Does that answer your question, Yvonne?
Oh, yes, you did. You answered my question.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Thank
right.
you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Good
You're
night.
You're welcome.
So that actually brings me to a question. So and we're probably going down a rabbit hole and sounding like a bar exam question right now. But so let's say the husband one and wife two divorce. They reach some sort of agreement about the division or equitable distribution of the pension.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say it's 50-50. And then one spouse, husband one, gets married again to wife two and they divorce. Can there be more division of the pension? If he hasn't reached retirement age
right.
yet, he just keeps getting married and divorced. What happens?
Silly rabbit. No, I mean, anything that is acquired or accumulated during the marriage
mm-hmm.
is considered marital. So
right.
if he's still working and contributing towards that pension
uh-huh.
While he is married to wife number two,
uh-huh.
That portion is considered marital. And then certainly whether or not she's going to end up with any portion of that is going to depend upon, you know, the facts of their case.
Right.
Because that's certainly only one part of, you know, what would go into the equitable distribution.
Right.
But to answer your question, could wife number two, you know, theoretically speaking, be entitled to collect part of that as well?
Yeah.
Absolutely. If he accumulated part of that during their marriage.
Right. Okay. So that's the key. I need to make sure I clarify that now. I understand. So, of course, it's the portion that was accumulated
mm-hmm.
during that particular marriage.
Correct.
So if he was married to wife one longer mm-hmm. and he accumulated more and paid into that pension for a longer period of time, wife two would not be entitled to what was accumulated during marriage one.
I mean, it's right. You have it, what makes it marital is what starting from the date of the marriage.
Got it. Got it. Absolutely. Okay. So we may touch on equitable distribution again before the show ends, but I wanted to go back to child support because I would imagine that comes up a lot in
mm-hmm.
your practice. And so, how are the parties calculating this, or is it the court? Is it by statute? How are we determining child support here in the state of Florida?
Child support is done by statute.
Okay.
There's child support guidelines that are built into the statute.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a variety of different factors under the statute where it talks about you know, what is can be considered income for the purposes of calculating child support, and how it's all done based on statute.
Yeah.
And sometimes parties will reserve on child support and don't request child support from each other, you know, and sometimes parties don't want to do that.
Right.
And it ends up getting court ordered. But like I said before, parties have the opportunity to kind of decide on their own before it ever goes in front of the judge.
Right.
So that is certainly something that people can work out in mediation too.
And can figure out the amount without having to go through the statutory calculation?
I mean, the statutory calculations are what they are, but sometimes people will agree to deviate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So then let's talk about with child support when there is no marriage. Does that change the way the case is being brought if the mother and the father are not going through a divorce or there's no marriage?
I mean, it doesn't change. In terms of how it's brought to the court, it might go through like a paternity action, mm-hmm. as opposed to a divorce case.
I gotcha. Okay.
Whether they're married or not, the child support is the right of the child. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna, if it's that issue and the parties haven't reserved on it, it's gonna get calculated and ordered.
Okay. So I know we briefly touched on it. We didn't get into a lot of detail about the financial disclosures in a divorce. Mm-hmm. But I know just from my time in law school when I was clerking at the Gulf Coast Legal Services, mm-hmm. For indigent parties, and they had divorce forms and different clinics that they would put on.
Right.
So I have very little knowledge, but that was the basis for me knowing that there was pretty extensive financial disclosures. You had to pretty much tell everything. So when it comes to child support, is there a similar process in terms of disclosures? And if so, is it as detailed as what it would be in a divorce?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. If the case is in the administrative, if it's an administrative child support case, mm-hmm. Department of Revenue doesn't tend to go too deep.
Okay.
You know, usually pay stubs and, you know, maybe some bank statements. It kind of just depends. Mm-hmm. But they usually limit. They usually limit the disclosure in the administrative cases. If it's filed in family court, typically they're going to follow the same standard mandatory disclosure that you have in any family case.
Okay.
Because in family court, they're mandatory unless the parties waive. And usually people don't waive.
Okay.
So.
Which I understand.
Right.
So then trying to make sure I don't lose my train of thought. So then with the child support cases and the disclosures, are we talking about a short process, a long process? How long does it take to kind of start the process of seeking child support and then being able to get something firm and ordered?
So are we just talking like a child support case in general, or are we talking about child support as part of like paternity or a divorce case?
We can keep it in general. So let's say someone comes to you, they're not married and they have separated from their child's father mm-hmm. or mother, and they want to be able to get some sort of financial assistance for the child. I don't know how that action would present. Is that a paternity? You know, I don't really know.
If they're just seeking child support, mm-hmm. I usually just recommend that they go the administrative route through the Department of Revenue.
Gotcha.
Because the only thing at issue is the child support, mm-hmm. and Department of Revenue can certainly handle that. Mm-hmm. They don't represent the parent, right? Their sole purpose is to establish child support for the benefit of the child.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, you know, like I have a case right now where I have child support where the father petitioned for a superseding order, basically to modify the administrative order. And the only issue is child support, right? There's mm-hmm. no time sharing, there's no parental responsibility or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So those cases typically don't take long when the only issue is child support.
Okay.
But again, that also depends.
Right. The typical lawyer response, it depends.
It does.
And so as an attorney, I know sometimes people, they may try to handle it on their own and they will try to seek child support without the assistance of counsel. When we're talking about the administrative route, is that something that you can assist with, or is that something that people typically just go through the agency and do on their own?
I have certainly had people that I've represented in the administrative process, mm-hmm. because like I said, Department of Revenue doesn't represent them.
Right.
They represent the state of Florida, and their sole purpose is to establish child support for the child.
Right.
So sometimes parents want private representation to ensure that the calculations are being done correctly and that everything that should be taken into consideration is being taken into consideration. For example, you know, I have parents who are paying daycare for the kids, and a lot of people don't realize that that counts towards child support.
Oh, okay.
Right, and so that's important when you're talking about establishing, especially when they're trying to do retroactive support, because the statute allows you to be able to go back up to 2 years prior to the date of filing.
Gotcha. Yeah. So then when we have, you know, a spouse or a mother or father who maybe is hard to find, or they can't find where they work, or it's issues that I imagine you might run into, where someone is seeking child support from someone who they can't locate, or they're saying they don't have a job, they don't know what's going on. How do you really address those kinds of issues?
I typically don't have cases where child support is the only issue, and mm-hmm. that's an issue.
Okay.
But I have heard that that can be an issue in Department of Revenue cases. When you do it in family court, you have a few different avenues available to you to try to locate a parent.
Okay.
But you're still able to get child support even if the parent's whereabouts are unknown.
Right.
You can still get it ordered. It's a, you know, it adds to the process, but it certainly is doable because, again, it's the right of the child.
Right.
So as long as certain notice requirements and whatnot are met, you can still get child support established for someone whose whereabouts are technically unknown.
Yeah. Okay. So we touched on equitable distribution a few times. We've been throwing that phrase out there. Mm-hmm. What is the standard here in Florida? I know I randomly in my hypothetical said 50-50 a few minutes ago, but really, is that the standard? And if not, how is it determined when we're looking at dividing of assets or marital assets during a divorce?
Right. So equitable distribution, you know, the key word being equitable, which is fair.
Sure.
So the statute, the courts, you know, it starts with the premise that everything should be divided equally, 50-50. But there certainly are arguments that can be made for why something should be unequally divided.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously very fact-specific and kind of depends upon the facts and circumstances of the case. But it certainly can happen,
right.
Depending on, you know, your circumstances. But essentially, the idea is that everything is equally divided unless you can demonstrate or be able to show why that should not be the case.
Right. And I know with one of our callers, we kind of distinguished between a marital asset versus alimony. So I had understood that alimony has recently changed in terms of the way it's addressed in Florida mm-hmm. now. So could you explain to our listeners what the various alimonies are and what you might be entitled to during a divorce?
Right. So, I mean, there are three different types of alimony. Prior to the change, permanent alimony used to be one of the types, and mm-hmm. that is no longer a thing now in Florida.
Okay.
the statute eliminated permanent alimony, so it's no longer available here in Florida.
Okay.
So now we're left with durational, rehabilitative, and bridge the gap alimony. Rehabilitative is essentially kind of like maybe you need skills, maybe you need to go back to school and get a
sure.
degree, you know. And so alimony can be made available to help support you while you do that, right?
Right.
Because you were married, you might have been a stay-at-home spouse,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe not had the opportunity to do that. So
sure.
rehabilitative alimony is designed to help with that. Durational alimony is designed to last a certain period of time.
And this set time is agreed upon?
You can agree mm-hmm. upon it, but remember what I said before about anything that's not agreed upon essentially is going to go in front of the judge. judge to,
right, so it to decide. Okay.
And then you've got Bridge the Gap, which is, you know, like it sounds like, to help bridge that gap from married life to single life, right? You had two incomes, right? And now you have one, or maybe you were the stay-at-home person and they were the breadwinner, mm-hmm. and now you're single and going to have to support yourself. So, but regardless, before you even get to any of that, the court is going to have to first figure out and determine whether or not you have a need for alimony, right? If you don't have a need for alimony, you're not going to get alimony.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even if you
so
have...
So the burden is on the person asking for it.
Seeking for it. They've got to be able to demonstrate that they've got a need for it.
Yeah.
And then even if they do have a need for it, the next thing the court is going to look at is whether or not the other spouse has the ability to pay.
Sure.
So you could have the need for alimony, but if the other spouse doesn't have the ability to pay it, mm-hmm. you're not going to get it.
Right.
And so it's only when the court first determines there's a need, and then that the other spouse has the ability to pay, does it start to do its analysis and consider certain factors to figure out what, if any, type of alimony you qualify for.
So we are winding down on time, but I have to finish that
okay.
point.
Yes, ma'am.
So with alimony, there has to be a ability to pay for the party that they're seeking the alimony from. Is there a standard like that in child support, where does the person have to have the ability to pay in order for child support to be awarded?
No, because child support is for the benefit of the
That's
child.
That's what I thought, and but I wanted every, to make sure.
Yeah, every parent has a legal obligation to provide financial support for their child. Mm-hmm. Every spouse doesn't have a legal obligation to provide spousal support
exactly.
for their
okay.
their spouse, right?
I understand so. The distinguishing factor mm-hmm. there then. Interesting. So one last question about bridging the gap. I'm sorry, rehabilitative alimony.
Mm-hmm.
Who decides when they've reached that point that they have now arrived at, or they've been rehabilitated, they've now figured out the skills, they've gotten
right.
back into the workforce?
Well, it's already outlined in the court order.
Okay.
So if the court does order rehabilitative alimony, the time limits, the requirements and things that have to be met, and deadlines, et cetera, are incorporated already into that final judgment. And so then if there are, those are not met,
yeah.
then you explore other avenues for why the court order wasn't complied with.
Got it. Melissa, we have so many more questions that we could discuss, so many different topics that we could really jump into. But of course, I told you that hour, it flies by.
Right.
So before we depart, I want to make sure that if there's anything final you'd like to share with our listeners, your contact information, your socials, how can they find you in the event that they are dealing with a family law issue?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. If they're dealing with a family law issue of any kind, they can certainly reach out to me at any time. They can follow me on Facebook and Instagram at goodlowlawpllc.com, GoodLowPllc, or they can call my office anytime at 813-865-3082.
It has been an absolute pleasure. I thank
Likewise.
You so much for joining us at FLA Law on the radio. As she said, she does family law, personal injury. She also handles some defense claims when there's no insurance. So if you get in a car accident, you weren't insured, you can call her for that as well. Thank you for coming tonight. As you know, we are here every Tuesday at 5 o'clock on WTAN 106.1 FM and 1340 AM, streaming live on YouTube and Facebook. So tell your family and friends to tune in next Tuesday at 5. It'll be Attorney Noyes, and he'll have a special guest with him as well. As always, if you have questions that you didn't get to answer and you want to call us at the office, our number is 727-796-8282. Otherwise, you'll have to hang out and wait until next Tuesday to get your questions answered live on FLA Law on the radio. Thank you, Attorney Goodlow, and
Thank
we will
you.
See everyone next week.